Okay, so today we're going to move on to our next mitzvah to discuss. For this, I saw the email, the title was The Art of Rebuke. And I want to focus on the mitzvah called Hochiach Tochiach Es Amisecha, the one needs to rebuke their fellow Jew. And I'll elaborate that much more, because rebuke is a very harsh term, and we have to make sure that we know what we mean when we say rebuke. But we'll start from the source of the Torah. The source of the Torah is the Pasuk, it's in Parshas Kedoshim. We're now up in our count to mitzvahs 238, 239, 240 in our mitzvah count. And it says, you should not hate your brother in your heart. You should, we'll translate it for now as rebuke your nation. And do not bear a sin upon him. That's the verse. So this verse actually is broken up into three separate commands. There's one command that you should not hate somebody in your heart. And we'll talk about what that means in a minute. Second command is this idea of rebuking another Jew. The third command, do not bear a sin upon him, is taken to mean don't embarrass somebody. So meaning don't take their sin and shove it in their face and make them feel embarrassed. You should be very sensitive when you're dealing with other people. So I want to discuss each of those in brief, and then we'll elaborate more on the idea of rebuking others. The first part of that verse talks about hating others in our hearts. So if you tell somebody your feelings and you reveal to them how you feel, you haven't violated this command. The command is you should not bear hatred in your heart and keep it private to yourself. But if somebody has wronged you and you feel some sort of animosity towards them, and you actually let them know about it, you haven't violated this command. Now, commentaries point out, you still can't, even if you can't publicly hate somebody either. We have a mitzvah to love our neighbors ourselves. We have a mitzvah not to bear grudges. We have a mitzvah not to take revenge. And even if you were to expose to another your feelings towards them, so you actually have gotten out of this command, and you haven't violated this mitzvah, but you're still violating other mitzvahs. So hatred is never a good thing. However, there is an additional problem with keeping hatred to yourself. Yeah?
Okay, so the question is, you're putting it that you have not violated the command. My question is, why haven't you kept the command? If you're telling somebody how you feel, and the mitzvah is that you should surely rebuke your neighbor, so then you're fulfilling the command.
Well, I'm discussing the first half. The first half is don't hate the person in your heart. I haven't gotten to the rebuking part yet. You're right, we'll get to that soon. But the first part is... You're jumping the gun, right. There you go. But in terms of not hating your fellow in your heart, by just exposing how you feel, you have to hate the person in your heart. However, again, even if you hate somebody in an open manner, you still have violated the command of loving your neighbors yourself. You violated bearing grudges, possibly, and the like. So hatred is never considered a good thing. But at least if you expose the hatred, you haven't violated this command. However, it is a mitzvah to hate people who are evil and wicked. So hatred is actually appropriate toward people who are truly wicked. It says in Psalms, Oveh Hashem Sinu Ra, those who love Hashem should hate evil. It's King David says, "L'masanecha Hashem esnai, hate those who hate you," and that's considered an appropriate feeling and emotion. So people who are generally not evil, nice people, we have a prohibition of hatred, and we have to make sure we somehow overcome our hatred towards those people. However, somebody who is genuinely a Russia, wicked, that person you actually have a mitzvah to hate. So that's not the focus of today's class. That's one part of this verse. On the heels of that, in the same exact verse, the Torah says you should rebuke your fellow. So what does that mean? Ramban Nachmanides explains that if you leave the hatred inside and you let it simmer, then you're violating the command, don't let hatred remain inside of you. But if you let the person know, you've done this to me, and it's bothering me, and it hurts me, that's considered a rebuke, because you pointed out the wrong to them. The person may not even know. It could be the person is unaware they hurt you or offended you. It could be once you point it out to them and make it an open discussion, you'll be able to resolve the issue.
Excuse me, and that, just one-to-one, what if there's, like, you don't want to do it in public, there's other people there.
Right, we'll get there. Everyone's asking good questions, we'll get to them. So, but Nachmanides points out the connection between these two mitzvahs, because one idea is don't keep the hatred in your heart, therefore you should reveal your hatred. And the way to do that would be going over to the person who has wronged you, if that's why you have a hatred, and discuss it with them. And that way, you've accomplished the mitzvah of rebuke, hochiach tochiach. You've rebuked them, you've shown them what they've done wrong, and you've also exposed the hatred from your heart. However, this is the mitzvah I really want to focus on, because it's something which could be totally misused. It can cause bigger problems than necessary if you rebuke someone in the wrong way. The word used in the Torah, hochiach tochiach, is the Hebrew term. So the word tochiach itself, which we translate as rebuke in a loose translation, The word usually is used in Hebrew not as a rebuke, more as a proof, as a to show somebody else something. For instance, if you're discussing a halachic topic in Jewish law and you want to prove something, you say, mochiach, I'm going to prove this to you. It's the same term. You're not rebuking somebody, you're proving it. You're showing them I have a source for something. So when you rebuke somebody else, the goal is not to come out in a way which is, you know, which is going to insult them and show your wrath and anger towards them. You're trying to guide them and show them the proper direction to go in. That's hocheach tochiach. That's what tochiach really means. And ultimately, when you do that, often you'll be able to resolve the issue, assuming it's something which is in terms of personal relationships. If you actually speak to the person and show them, you know, when you did that to me, it was offensive. I wish you would maybe have done it in a different way. So the person may be offended and say, "Ah, you're an idiot. You don't get it." Or a person might say, "You're right. You know, I apologize. I didn't realize I did that wrong to you." But when you're mochiach, when you show them they've done wrong, that often can resolve the issues. Yeah.
So far, you framed it as what the other person did to you personally.
Right. So I'm going to talk about other things in it also. Yeah, good. But the artist, right, so now we're talking about wrongs, people who have wronged us. But the truth is, as we need to know, the mitzvah applies to anybody who's violated any Torah command, whether it be something who's wronged you, someone who's wronged another, or someone who's wronged God. You have the obligation, if somebody insults your friend or insults another Jew, to go and rebuke them. And if somebody violates Torah commands, you also have to rebuke them. Again, using the word rebuke in a loose manner, but you have to go in and show them the right way. So I'll discuss how it should be done. What exactly is the art of rebuking somebody according to the Torah? But first, let's just get a perspective on the idea. Because I think we all live in America, and in American society, there is this concept, which is one of the most prevalent concepts in America, about tolerance towards others. Everyone can do what they want to do. Everyone's able to, as long as they don't hurt someone else, everyone can do exactly how they want to live life. If they're comfortable with it, they can do it. If it's good for them, then it's fine. And as long as it doesn't hurt me, doesn't offend me, doesn't encroach upon my territory, they can do whatever they want. That's an American attitude. That's the culture we grow up in. That's the culture that we're surrounded by. And it means that people say, I'm not responsible for others. You know, unless it's going to hurt somebody else, everyone can do what they want to do. That's the true attitude that we grow up around. So that leads to so much that we find in terms of politics and news in modern times is based on the fact everybody wants to be able to do exactly what they want to do. And what do you have against them? I'm not hurting anybody else. That's usually what we hear. So if it hurts others, we stop them. But if it doesn't hurt anybody else, we say it's not my business. What you do in the privacy of your home, what you do with your friends, what you do in your life, doesn't affect me, so I don't stop you.
Unless you're
Pinchas. Unless you're right. Pinchas would be a different story. This attitude is, you know, it's something which really seeps into us in American culture, but it's not a Jewish attitude. Because the Jewish attitude is that we're all responsible for one another. There's right and there's wrong, and there's responsibility. There's a famous concept that is cited in the Talmud, Kol Yisrael Rivim Zeh Bazeh. Every Jew is responsible for one another. The word used in that passage, a Rivim, actually is translated as a guarantor. So if you want to take out a loan, the bank will ask you, do you have anybody who's going to back you up? Is there a guarantor for this loan? So we're all guarantors for one another. So for example, let's say somebody takes out a loan, I'm the guarantor. And I see this individual is being a little bit irresponsible and foolish with his money. So he has a $25,000 loan to pay back, and I'm the guarantor on the loan, and I see him throwing away money left and right. So I'm going to step in and I'm going to say something to him, because if he doesn't have the money, the creditor is coming to me and I'm going to be in big trouble. So I'm not just going to let it slide, you know, it's okay, don't worry about it, you know, he's doing what he wants to do, he likes doing that. I'm going to say it affects me, I'm responsible, I have to step in and I have to rebuke, I have to show him the right way to go so that it doesn't come back and backfire upon me. So you'll stop him, and you'll stop him very quickly when you see him throwing away his money as a guarantor. So that's the concept that every Jew is a guarantor for another, meaning that if you see one Jew doing something which is foolish or wrong, so you can't have the attitude that doesn't affect me. It's not going to come back and impact anything in my life. It's not true. We view it that it all comes together. In God's world, every single person affects every other person. If people are doing right, the world's going to head in the right direction. If they're doing wrong, the world heads in the wrong direction. And every single step we take in the right way is going to impact everyone around us. And the opposite, if somebody's doing the wrong thing, it affects everyone around them as well. Any single violation of the Torah impacts the entire world. Another analogy given by the rabbis is that imagine you're on a ship. So the guy sitting two rows in front of you takes out a drill and starts drilling into the floor. So you're going to say to him, what are you doing? You're crazy. He says, what do you mean? This is my seat. You do it in your own seat. This is my seat. Why does this doesn't affect you? You see, the whole ship's going to go down. That's how we have to view it. There's somebody, you know, anybody who's violating or is drilling into the floor of the ship, and it will impact all of us. So even though it might be 10 rows ahead of us, but if it's one ship, it's one ship. The Jewish people are considered like one body. So if you're, even if your pinky is hurting you, it affects your head as well. It affects your foot as well. Every part of the body is interconnected. And when one Jew is doing something inappropriate, it's going to impact the entire body. Every single part of the body is going to feel that. So there is this concept. This is the Torah concept of responsibility for one another, and it applies that whenever you see somebody doing something incorrect, we do have a mitzvah to step in and guide them and show them the right way. Additionally, beyond the fact that it impacts the whole world, the Mishnah says a very interesting thing. The Mishnah discusses the great Rabbi Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, one of the greatest rabbis of the Mishnah's times. And it was talking about the laws of Shabbos. And there are, not for right now, the details, but there are different restrictions about carrying on Shabbos, and restrictions about even what your animals can carry on Shabbos. So one of those restrictions has to do with an animal wearing a certain ribbon in its horns. Again, the details aren't important for right now. But the Mishnah records that Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria's cow went out on Shabbos wearing a ribbon in its horns. And the rabbis disapproved. So we have written in the Mishnah for all generations to see that the great Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria did something that was disapproved of by the rabbis. So the Gemara asks, well, wait a minute, what do you mean that his cow did this? He was very wealthy. He had thousands of cows. Why isn't this saying his cow? Sounds like he had one cow, but we know that he was a very wealthy man and had thousands and thousands of cows. So the Gemara says that really it wasn't him. It was his neighbor's cow. But since he could have stepped in and showing his neighbor the proper path, if he didn't do it, he gets blamed for it. So for all posterity, we have in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria's cow did something on Shabbos which the rabbis disapproved of, and it wasn't really him, it was his neighbor's cow. But because he could have stepped in, and he could have shown his neighbor the proper path, he could have taught his neighbor how he's supposed to act on Shabbos, and he didn't do that, therefore he gets blamed for it. So the rabbis also say that anybody who's in a position where they could help and show a fellow Jew the proper path, and they don't help that fellow Jew, they also get punished for the sin. Because you could have stepped in and helped the other person, you didn't step in. So we have many sources for that throughout the Talmud. So if you can make a difference in someone's life, and you don't make the difference, you get part of the blame as well. Because you could have taken that person and guided them, and showed them the right way. On a larger scale, that's why we look at leaders, their responsibility for the masses, and they get blamed for the sins of the masses. The Talmud discusses how many, many plagues which struck Jewish people in the times of the Talmud would begin, or in the times even of the Tanakh, would begin with the leaders themselves. Because since the nation was doing things which were inappropriate, the leaders get the blame for it. Because they were the ones who were supposed to step up there and guide the nation to do the right thing. There's a famous case in the Talmud. We know that if somebody murders unintentionally, in a case of manslaughter, so the Torah law is that they were sent to a city of refuge, Ir Miklat. They had to be exiled from their hometown and go to certain cities, and they would reign in that city until death of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. So the Talmud asks, well, why are you waiting for the death of the high priest? I mean, what did he have to do with it? I mean, he didn't kill anybody. So why are these murderers all waiting around, waiting for the Kohen Gadol to die, so they can go back home? And the Kohen Gadol seems to be totally removed from the situation. Why is he blamed for it? And the answer is, since he was the Kohen Gadol, he's the spiritual leader of the generation. If things happen under his watch, then it is partially his fault. Because under his watch, people are being irresponsible. He has to get up and pray for the nation, guide the nation, teach the nation, set the example. And even though he's not fully liable for what happens, but he definitely is blamed in some degree for what happens under his watch. Yeah?
Is that considered to be healing nowadays? Or is that such a high standard that it's, and we've fallen so low, it's not like in Israel, with everything that's going on?
It's true on this as well. If there's somebody who really is in a position to teach and to guide and doesn't do it, he's responsible. Nowadays, it's just that the Jewish people are so split in many ways that we don't have leaders that lead the entire people. But for different communities or the different sects of the Jewish people, if there's somebody who could step in and guide them and doesn't do it, there is a blame that's placed upon them. Yeah?
Well, that's such a great principle. However, when we talk about Rabbi Akiva and the death of his 24,000 students, it's rarely raised that Rabbi Akiva showed some fault in leadership. Rarely. He's usually praised. He went on and he recruited more students and he continued. But
you might be right. I would not personally say anything to Rabbi Akiva myself, but you know, the principle holds true to Rabbi Akiva as well, and it could be there is some blame. I don't know. I don't know any sources that discuss that one way or the other. But that principle is very important. So it applies on a level, at a large level, and applies in our own personal lives. If whether it be within our family circles, our friends, our communities, if we have the ability to help others and we don't, then we do get some of the blame. Now, some people you're not going to be able to reach to. Some people just aren't even receptive to it. You have no connection with them. So then they're not your responsibility. People within your circle, if you do have the ability to help and you don't try, then the blame is placed upon us as well, you know, because we have that responsibility.
What if you do try and the people get angry?
So I'm going to get to that. Okay. I'm going to get to that. And that's one way you can even read the verse in the Torah. The verse says, don't hate your neighbor, your brother in your heart. You should rebuke them. And you should not bear the sin upon him. So the upon him could mean upon the person, meaning embarrassing the person. The upon him could mean upon yourself. That if you don't rebuke them, then the sin is bared upon you. That God blames you for the sin as well. So there's an accountability we have for everybody within our circle, within our reach, within our realm of impact. And if we don't help them out, then we are responsible. And the other perspective to have on it is that, as we said, it's grouped together with the idea of hating our fellow Jew. Because when you don't step in to guide someone, then that itself is an act of hatred. If you truly care for those around you, then you want to help them out. You want to step in and guide them. It should hurt us to see somebody doing the wrong thing because we know that they're shooting themselves in the foot. That we know it. And if we saw somebody, let's say we saw a good friend of ours about to drink a bottle of poison, we would step in very quickly to stop them, because we know they're about to kill themselves. So it's the same thing. You know, we don't view it in the same way, but we should. Violating God's will is like drinking poison. For the soul, it's poison for the soul. There's poison for the body, poison for the soul. And you see somebody is about to drink poison, they're about to do something which is violating God's will, which will hurt another human being, which will impact others in a negative way. So if you don't step in and stop them, it's like watching your good friend drink a can of poison and just sit back and relax. That's what it's like. Why does a parent discipline a child? Because they love the child and the child to go in the right direction. So it's not because of any sort of hatred towards the child. It's the opposite. It's only because of love of the child does a parent step in and discipline a child. So that's if we don't step in and guide and rebuke our fellow Jews, we're actually participating in an act of hatred. Not consciously. We don't hate the person, but we should know those who we love, we try to help out, and we try to guide them in the right direction. It even says it concerning God himself. The verse says, "It's Asher Yahav Hashem Yochiach," that God will Yochiach, same word, will rebuke those who he loves. When we experience difficulties in life, sometimes that's God rebuking us, but not because he wants to punish us, but because he wants to guide us back in the right direction, make us think twice before we act. So God, that's exactly what the verse says, those who God loves, he will muchiach, he will rebuke.
What would be an example? A day going wrong?
Could be getting wrong, could be someone getting ill, could be a family member who's having difficulties, it could be somebody passing away, anything which you feel that something has gone wrong for me. So often we have to think, well, maybe there's a message here from God. Maybe God's doing this to try to teach me and bring me in the right direction. Somebody had difficulties in terms of finances. I mean, there's so many times in life where we might have a challenge heading our way. And we immediately should think, well, is this a message from God to try to bring me back to a certain direction? Now that's because for those who God loves, he will rebuke. So part of the reason that we don't participate in rebuking is because we don't look at a person's actions as a reality the same way we view poison as a reality. Going back to the same analogy. Anybody who's about to drink poison, we would jump in, knock it out of their hands, tackle them to the ground, everything we can to stop them drinking the poison. When it comes to a mitzvah, when it comes to hurting another person, when it comes to violating the Torah, we don't view it as the same level of reality. We don't view it as poison for the soul. We just think, you know, unfortunately the person is not doing the thing which we feel is the right thing to do. But we don't look at it as a serious violation as it would be if they were endangering their lives. The true Torah perspective would be that there's poison, like we said, there's poison for the soul, there's poison for the body. And just like if you see somebody about to hurt their body, you'll stop them. If you see them about to hurt their soul, you should also stop them. It's the same idea. There's another mitzvah we didn't discuss yet, which hopefully we'll get to probably in the next few months. It says, you're not allowed to stand by and watch the blood of your friend. which means that if somebody is in a life-threatening situation, you have to save them. If somebody is about to be killed, you have to save them. That's lusama damri echa. So commentaries point out that that applies both to the body and the soul. And exactly what we're saying. If somebody is drowning, you have a mitzvah on the Torah to jump in and save them, assuming that you're not going to drown yourself. You know what to do. You know, if somebody is in any life-threatening situation, you have to make sure that you do your best to pull them out of the situation. So there's a life-threatening situation and there's a soul-threatening situation. If their soul is being threatened, you have to do the same thing. Because the body and the soul, in many ways, the soul is more important. The soul is eternal. The body is not. So we have that same mitzvah, not to stand by and watch as our friends ruin their souls, the same way we can't stand by and watch as they ruin their bodies. So I think often it's a lack of recognition of the importance of God's will itself, which keeps us from rebuking others. Now I want to get more to the more practical parts. Everyone's asking questions about how to do it. Let's say we'll be receptive to it. So there's a lot written in terms of how should one rebuke? What is the proper way to guide somebody? Because if you do it wrong, it can be counterproductive. Sometimes it can cause more hatred, more ill will. It could backfire against you. So your friend who you love and care about, you go over and you criticize them, they're never going to talk to you again. And there, did you accomplish anything? You didn't accomplish anything. It backfired right back at you. So commentaries discuss when is the right time to rebuke, when is the wrong time to rebuke, how to do it. So I'm going to read for you just a few different points. First, I'm going to start in the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, which again is a Sefer that we look at very often discussing mitzvahs. So he writes that number one, he quotes from the Talmud, just like it's a mitzvah to say something that will be heard, it's a mitzvah to be silent in a time where you won't be heard. So we have to be very intelligent with our words. If we know somebody will be receptive to what we say, we definitely should step forward and say something. But in a time where we know they're not going to listen to us, sometimes the mitzvah is to remain silent. It's better you remain silent than do something which will be foolish. That's number one. He also writes that if somebody is so wicked that they just refuse to listen to any sort of rebuke or criticism or guidance, or somebody is, others point out, very foolish, or somebody is just so rebellious or so arrogant, they just won't be receptive to any sort of criticism. So sometimes it's better just to, you know, you can't do anything about it. So stepping in is not going to help. So there are many different sources that would recommend that you have to think in advance. Will this person listen to me? Will this have any chance of being helpful or not? So it could be, if you aren't sure, you should go ahead and do it. That's what the Chofetz Chaim writes. You know, you never know. But if you're reasonably sure that it's not going to help this person, and at best they're going to ignore it, at worst it's going to backfire and they're going to hate you forever, so then in those times it's best to remain silent. It could be in the future if you'll find some venue in which you can speak to them about it. But for now, it would be wisest to remain silent. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes, he says that anybody who's sensitive to others, to the needs of the soul, needs to sit back and think, will there be any benefit in my rebuke? And trust in Hashem, that Hashem will help you when you're fighting against those who are violating God's will. You should not be nervous, you should not be scared, because Hashem guards all those who love Him, and God destroys the wicked. And if you are able to actually help somebody get back on the right path, you get great reward. But if you don't have, like we said before, if you do not rebuke someone who you could have changed, then you also get some of the blame for their sin. So it's important to really just analyze the situation and make an intelligent decision. Will my rebuke be effective or not? Yeah.
The modern day experts in communication have some light to shed on these sore ideas. Sometimes it's better to give a person, don't say, you shouldn't do this or don't do this. The modern, they would say, like, to say it in a positive way.
And so I'm going to get to that. The Rambam talks about that. I'm going to get to that also. Ultimately, you know, for different people, different approaches work. That's number one. Some people need a harsh, you know, you gotta give it to them. Others, they respond better to something more kind and more gentle. And that's part of the, I mean, rebuke is something you should not do on the spot. Never do it out of anger. Never do it spontaneously. It's something which you have to plan for. Because why? Because you really care about this person. You really want to help them out. So you have to sit back and think, well, what is the best approach for this individual? on an individual basis. Some people need you to come over and give it to them directly and give it to them hard. And they'll take it and they'll respond. Some people need you to beat around the bush. Some need you to get to the point. Some need you to speak very quietly. Some people like criticism. Some people don't like criticism. Everybody is different. But you have to plan for it because there's an art involved in this. It's something which is really, there's a technique involved. So I want to read to you from the Rambam, Maimonides. And he discusses how what's the proper technique of rebuking others. And again, like we said, the word rebuke is not a great translation. That's not a better one to use. You lose a lot in translation. But when you want to go and criticize or rebuke another person, and again, in a way which is going to, because you care, I'm going to bring them back to the proper path, what should you do? So first the Rambam says that if somebody wrongs you, don't hate them and don't be silent. Like we said, that you shouldn't hate them, but even if you hate them, you have to make sure that you reveal it. You should keep it in your heart. And he says it's a mitzvah to inform the person about what they've did. So Rambam, the word Rambam uses in Hebrew, lehodio, means to inform. So not rebuke, but inform them. Could be they didn't realize what happened. Inform the person what they did, and you say, why did you do this to me? And that's from hochiach tochiach, that's from this mitzvah. If the person apologizes, then you should pardon them, accept their apology, and move on. That's number one. Now, if you see somebody doing a sin or going on an improper path, the Rambam then says it's a mitzvah to bring him back to the right path. Because ultimately the goal is not just to criticize and rebuke others, it's to bring them back to the right path. That's the goal. And you should inform them, shehuchote, that he is sinning himself, meaning he is hurting himself with his bad deeds. So the Rambam is always very precise in his wording. He says again the word inform. You're informing the person. You're informing them. You're not rebuking, you're informing. And you're informing them that they're hurting themselves. That's the tone in your rebuke should never be condescending, should not be with any arrogance. It should be totally, you should bring across the emotion that you care about this person and it's for their own good. And that's why you're rebuking them. That's why you're coming to speak to them. And he says you should tell the person, when you are rebuking another, again, rebuke's not a great word, but when you're mochiach in the Hebrew word, somebody else, you should tell them privately, as Brenda pointed out before, that you shouldn't do it publicly, you should do it privately. Publicly would be very embarrassing. And part of this mitzvah is to make sure to avoid embarrassing another. That's in the same exact verse in the Torah, is don't hate them in their hearts, rebuke them, and don't embarrass others. So you have to make sure you do it privately, don't embarrass them. And he says, v'edaber lo benachas, speak to the person very gently, v'lashon raka, in a soft tone, in soft language, and inform the person that you're only speaking to them for their own good in order to bring them to the world to come. So that's part of the rebuke. You sit down with them and you inform them, I'm here to help you. I want you to have the best. I want you to go on the right path. I want you to have eternal reward. And therefore, I'm here to speak with you and do it very gently. If the person accepts the rebuke, that's great. If not, you should try again and try again and try again, the Rambam says. And the Rambam actually says something very interesting based on the Talmud. Rambam says, so let's say you go back to the person 75 times, and you're not getting anywhere with them. Now again, we're assuming the person is somebody that you feel you could get through to. If you feel it's a lost cause, it seems like you don't need to go in the first place. That's what we read before. But you feel this person could be receptive, that is not being receptive quite yet. So Rambam says, how long does this have to go on for? He says, until the person is ready to punch you. That's what he says. Whether it means he actually punches you or is ready to punch you, but it's to that extreme. When you're about to get knocked in the face by the person, that's me, okay, I've done enough. You know, but your mitzvah goes until that point. Because that's how much we have to try to bring fellow Jews back on the proper path. But anybody, and we said before, Rambam repeats the same concept. Anybody who could rebuke and doesn't is also blamed for the sin. He points out, that when you first are rebuking another, you should make sure that you don't say anything which will embarrass them. Don't speak harshly. And that's the rabbi says, you might think that you should rebuke a person to the point where they're embarrassed. So the verse says no. You should make sure that you do it in a way which is very sensitive and doesn't make them feel ashamed. But he says somebody who's actually wicked and evil, that person who is embarrassed. So then again, that's a different topic. But somebody who is in a category of an evil person, you've no business to rebuke that person. You're allowed to hate that person. You can embarrass that person. Because that person is wicked and evil. And that person we kind of push aside as hopeless and helpless. But those are very important points of the Rambam. So let's just recap that. Rebuking should be done privately. It should be done in a way where you're there for the person's own good. And they should know that. They should feel that. You should do it with soft language, calmly, in a way which doesn't embarrass them. Now, again, it takes planning. It also takes that we are not doing it with any feeling of arrogance. If a person thinks that you're coming over with a holier-than-thou attitude, you think you're better than me, then it's not going to go anywhere. If the person senses any sort of condescending tone in your voice, it's not going to go anywhere. It has to be with some sincerity. And when the sincerity is there, and the love is there, the person will be receptive. And that's where the mitzvah really comes in. The one other commentary, the Kliyakar points out, three categories of people you have no mitzvah to rebuke. So one we already mentioned is somebody who is evil, somebody who's really wicked. Next category, he says, is somebody referred to as a leitz. A leitz is hard to translate into English, but it's somebody who is just constantly looking to cut others down, basically. That he doesn't look at anything of importance, anything of significance, he just brushes aside. I've seen translation, in modern Hebrew, a leitzan is a clown. That's not a good translation. I've seen it translated as like a scoffer, or I don't know the best translation for it. But somebody who just doesn't care. They do what they want to do. They just don't care what you have to say. Not that they're wicked people. But some people they just don't respond to anybody else. Just whatever you tell me, I don't care. So that kind of person, you can't get through to. And the third category, he says, is a kasil, which would be translated as a fool. I'm not sure how you define a fool in modern terms, because you might think somebody's foolish. Right?
Maybe it's somebody who's cognitively impaired.
They use a different word for that, though, in terms of rabbinic writing, so I don't know. Usually someone who's cognitively impaired would be referred to as a shota, not as a ksil. A ksil is somebody who's just silly or foolish. So I don't know how to apply that one in practical terms, but ultimately, the message is the same, that we have to find people who we think we could impact. We have a mitzvah to step forward and do it in the proper way, the proper technique, with thought, with focus, and impact them. People who we are reasonably sure would not be receptive, we have no reason to discuss. It's not worth our time, it can be counterproductive. The other half of this equation is, let's say you are the object of the rebuke. Now, that's more difficult sometimes.
Why did you look at me when you said that?
I try to look around everybody at all times, I'm glad you came today, Fran. This is for you. The rabbis list in Pirkei Avos the 48 ways to acquire Torah, also referred to as 40 ways to wisdom, or also referred to as 48 ways to happiness. I mean, there's different ways people kind of portray these 48 ways. But one of the 48 ways, which through these ways, the rabbis say you can acquire Torah knowledge and expertise in Torah, is one of those called Oves Tochachos, loving Tochacho, loving rebuke, loving criticism. Not that you love to criticize, but you love to be criticized. And the point is, from our end, really, any person who wants to grow and improve and be better should be open to criticism. Because it's as difficult as it is, it has to take a little bit of humility. But we have to overcome our arrogance and our ego and be willing to listen to others' feedback. Because if we want to become better people, we want to advance in life, advance in our service of God, advance in our relationships, then we have to be able to take criticism and to use it to improve. Now, it's very difficult. One of the most difficult things is to sit there and be criticized by somebody else. I'm sure we've all experienced it in our lifetimes, and it's extremely difficult, very uncomfortable. We all look at the situation and we want to run away from it. That's how we feel. But, on the other hand, if we never got any feedback, nobody ever analyzed or criticized our actions, then we would never know where we have to improve. It takes a lot of humility. It takes a lot of self-discipline. But if we can take positive criticism in a way, positive not meaning that it's criticism which is trying to help us. And usually if it comes from a friend, from a spouse, from a parent, those are the times where they're really there to help you. And they're trying to teach you the best thing. And you have to take it in stride, take it in, and try to build on it. Unfortunately, often we hear criticism which is coming out of anger, or spite, or arrogance. And then we hear that condescending tone, and at that point, that's where we run away from it. Now, somebody's truly humble, even when it comes in a condescending way, also takes it in. Because, obviously, this person thinks this about me, I have to do something to change. And ultimately, the rabbis discuss one of the greatest mitos, one of the greatest character attributes of a person, is to be called Hanelovin Vein Oven. You're someone who's willing to sit back and take criticism, but not criticize others. Because you want to become better. You want to grow. You want to be the best person you can be. And sometimes it's impossible to become better without hearing from others. You know, we all think we're perfect. You know, we all think what we do. I mean, we all know we're not perfect. But we all look at our lives, we say, well, we're pretty good. We don't realize that there's a lot of things we do that may not be right, that may hurt others, that may impact others, that may not be in line with God's will. And often you need some outsider to come in and tell you, by the way, what you said the other day wasn't appropriate. Or that offended me. Or that wasn't the right thing to do in that situation. And when you hear that, you can respond, well, you don't care, you think you're better than me. Or you can respond, thank you so much, you know, I'm going to try it. I'll think about that and try to improve. Not everybody who comes to criticize us is always right, but at least we should be receptive to criticism. And the rabbis say, Ovas esotochachos, loving tocha, loving being rebuked, is a way to become a greater person. It's the way that you acquire Torah, it's the way that you acquire wisdom, and it's the way that you grow and become a greater person in life. So there's two sides of the equation. Number one, we do have a mitzvah to rebuke others. It's our job as Jews, it's our responsibility, it does impact us, and our love of a fellow human being dictates that we have to help bring them back to the right path, because we're seeing them drink poison. That's what we're doing. On the other side of the equation, we have to be receptive to tochacha. If somebody's doing their mitzvah, they come to us and criticizing us, well, it's for our own good. And it's only in order to help us grow. And therefore, on both ends of the equation, we have to be very receptive and very involved in this mitzvah. It's a very important mitzvah because this is really the source of why should we step in and help other Jews become better Jews. Why are people involved in outreach efforts in Kiruv? Why? I mean, it's not for the money, trust me. You know, it's not for the fame. But it's essentially, it should be coming from a sincere feeling towards other Jews. That if I can help, I will help. That's how we should all feel. If I can't help another Jew, I will help another Jew. If we can't, we can't. If we can't, then sometimes it's counterproductive. But if there's a way where we can help, we have a mitzvah to step in and help. Any questions? Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
It's a two-part question.
Yeah.
First part is, where does benefit of the doubt come in as far as when someone has wronged you or they do something and you're deciding to give them the benefit of the doubt that they really didn't mean it that way, that you just took it that way, and you shouldn't really speak? And the second part is, with the hating in your heart, it seems, I'm just a little confused about if you were to let that person know that they hurt you so that you don't hold the hatred in your heart, you're not necessarily trying to get them to improve. It's really letting them know. And I'm sure you can do it without anger, but usually if someone's wronged you,
right,
you want to let them know to release that, but you're not necessarily saying, because I want you to improve in the world to come, and I just
okay,
want
right.
to... So I'm a little... if you could just...
So let me say, I'll do the second question first. The second question, there are two separate mitzvahs. One mitzvah is don't hold anger in your heart. One mitzvah is rebuke others. They're said in the same verse because ultimately we hope they come together.
Okay.
But they don't always come together. Sometimes you're right, you're releasing the anger, and that's a positive thing. The Torah is telling you it's a positive to release your anger. Sometimes that's where it stops. And you're not ready to go in and say, I love you so much, I want you to improve. And you're 100% right. But that's why it's two separate mitzvahs. The Torah just groups them together because we hope that they'll somehow connect to one another. And hopefully the releasing of the anger will help the person then therefore improve and become better. But it's not always true. You're right. In terms of the first question, there's actually a topic last week, the benefit of the doubt. But I would say the benefit of the doubt comes up, I guess, in two different ways. Number one is that you see an action which you're unsure why the person did what they did. It could be it wasn't bad. It could be it was bad. So that's where you should say, probably it was a good thing. I'm not going to get involved. Because you give the benefit of the doubt. On the other hand, sometimes the action was clearly an inappropriate action. Now you could say it could be the person had a bad day. Could be the person was hungry. He has a headache. You know, he didn't drink his coffee this morning. I mean, there's reasons you can start explaining the person's not a bad person. They did a bad action. So if you see an action which you know is bad, so then that's the time where you still could step in and say, you should know that I understand you may have reasons why you did it, and I'm not judging you as a bad person, but you should know this action was a bad action. Also, we discussed last week, you can also ask the person, you know, I saw you do X. I just, you know, it doesn't seem to fit who you are. Like, well, you know, why'd you do that? You don't have to immediately blame. Once they say I did it because, you know, they give you a bad reason, then you can start with the review part of it. But in a case where the action itself could go one way or the other, then I feel in that case you have no mitzvah at all to go rebuke them because you should just say the action probably was a good thing and I'm missing the boat. But sometimes the action is very clearly a bad action, then you can just say the person's not a bad person, but they did something bad for some side reason. That's how I would do that situation. Yeah?
What if there's a situation that's, you know, clearly not benefit of the doubt material. It's an issue, and you talk to the person not once but twice, and the person says, "Oh, I'm sorry," you know, but then they keep doing it. Is there a point, like you were saying, like until you would hit your head against the wall?
Until they're really to bash you in the head.
Right. But I mean, what if it's like emotionally hard for you to keep saying something to the person?
Right.
I mean, like they're not physically bashing you in the head, but emotionally, it's like, oh, how many times can I say this to the person? I mean, one rabbi told me you don't have to do it anymore.
Right.
But so
I mean, from the way that the Rambam describes it, it sounds like as long as we feel that it may accomplish something, we still have a mitzvah to keep on going.
Yeah. Even if it hurts us?
Even hurt, I mean, mitzvahs are challenging sometimes. We know many mitzvahs are challenging. You know?
Oh, dear.
These are also challenging, you know? As long as you feel you can still benefit the other. Even, I mean, this mitzvah is very uncomfortable at times, as we all know. To step in and say, you know, my friends, I want to tell you something you did, it's very hard, very uncomfortable. But we know the mitzvahs many times challenge us, you know? And this one's as challenging as the others, just as, even more challenging at times. So, but if you get to the point where you feel like you're speaking to the wall, then you can stop, you know?
Okay.
But if you feel that the person is listening and they just, whatever, they forget, that they just need a little bit more encouragement, you should keep on going if you can, you know? I mean, sometimes you keep on saying it and they say, yeah, I'm sorry, but you feel like you're speaking to the wall. At that point, I think, then you're not actually accomplishing anything and you can stop. But you have to judge each situation individually, you know? And it could be, for now you stop, but then 6 months from now you find another opportunity to bring it up again. You have to take some sort of planning and intelligence to get it done. You have a question? Yeah.
And either part, either just informing them of what you feel they've done wrong or giving them rebuke, you said without arrogance. And I'm remembering that it's like when you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara. You have to be certain here that you're really doing it for their benefit. And this idea of just venting your anger is good. You don't want to go dumping on somebody just to make yourself feel better.
No, that's, I mean,
so
yes and no. I mean, the Torah says don't hate your brother in your heart. So you have a mitzvah to let that anger out. You have a mitzvah to let anger out. Now, but do it in a way which is not as unoffensive. And do it in a way which is sensitive to the other person is very important. Just to let it all go, you know, so that would be violating many other Torah commands at that point. So that's true. But the Torah says you have to make sure that anger doesn't remain bottled up. That's something the Torah does say.
But you have to be sure that you're really giving rebuke to improve the other person and not to satisfy yourself that you're better than he is, or to get even with him for something.
So this is what Marcy was saying before.
Yeah, that's why I thought, like, that he separated this.
Yeah, the two mitzvahs.
Let the anger out and
right.
Not worry about making
the two mitzvahs ideally should come together.
Right, I was separating them.
Yeah. The two mitzvahs ideally should come together, but don't have to come together. And if they do come together, that's obviously the best, but each one stands alone. And if you keep anger bottled up, you violated this mitzvah.
So I shifted this. So when you're giving rebuke, you're giving instruction, you have to be careful that you're really doing it for the own person, the other person's benefit, and not to satisfy some urge you have to bring them down.
Right. Okay, that's important. That's very important. Because if you're doing it with an urge to bring them down, usually that comes across in your words, and it's not getting you anyways. You know? People are very sensitive when someone else comes over to them, and they can really read, is the person sincere or not? I think that's almost across the board. It'd be very difficult for someone to come over with an arrogant attitude or condescending tone and actually be effective in their rebuke. I think that's very clear.
That's why not being, like you said, you can't be spontaneous with your rebuke. It has to be planned, and I think that's the key.
Right.
Then your anger is automatically going to be at a different level.
Absolutely.
So
right.
I think that's very wise.
Right. It shouldn't be done in the heat of the moment. It shouldn't be done, you know, you can go a week or two later. I don't think there's a time limit on mitzvah. But you have to take some time to figure out, how am I going to approach this person? Take your time. I never saw anywhere, any source, there's a time limit on this mitzvah. You can't ignore it, but as long as you're trying to plan an intelligent way to approach someone else, you should. That's what you should do. Yeah.
Why? This is going to sound funny, but in the bait-in situation,
you're
actually giving a rebuke in the bait-in, in a sense. It's testimony, it's, you know, addressing maybe it's specific to the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe the situation you're talking about, but basically in general, you're not rebuking the other, you're just presenting your case to the judges, what you're doing. And when you're presenting it, yes, you might be putting some sort of blame on the other, but your goal there is nothing to do with this mitzvah of rebuke. Your goal there is to reach the truth.
I wasn't sure if even in that situation, if you had to have it in mind.
Right. I don't think so.
Okay.
That's a situation.
I've read of a case where a third party is somehow being taken advantage of by some surrounding thing, and you happen to know about it. Person might not be aware that certain things are happening. So I guess that's kind of a different situation.
That's, I guess, more of a Lashon Hara question than a rebuke question. That's more of a question relevant to Lashon Hara, I think, than to rebuke. I mean, the person who is taking advantage of the other, you can go and rebuke that person.
Yeah.
And if the person is being taken advantage of, you have a question of Lashon Hara. Am I allowed to tell him negative report about the other? So I think it's two different questions.
Like,
yeah.
Spreading some rough assumption rumor about you, or you should know that, or something like that.
Right. Yes, I think that's more of a Lashon Hara issue in that situation, which is not the topic for right now. But certainly, in the midst of your bilkut, if somebody is cheating or taking advantage of another, you should go over to the one taking advantage and speak to them.
Because they're non-Jewish.
So then, you have no mitzvah to rebuke a non-Jew, but you would have a mitzvah to protect the Jew. So, at that point, you should go to the Jew and do. I mean, even in the Lashon Hara, you should go to the Jew and tell them what's happening. If Lashon Hara is allowed in a case where it's going, where damage should come to another person, so even if there's two Jews involved, you could go to the Jew who is being taken advantage of and speak to him about it, because Lashon Hara, you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara in a case like that. I mean, generally, you know, there's some other details involved, but any case like that, definitely speak to the rabbi beforehand just to make sure you do it the proper way. Because the laws of Lashon Hara are very intricate. But there are definitely ways of stopping the situation in the appropriate halachic way in that case. Okay. Have a,